Blog Talk Radio.
What you waiting on me for? Good morning, good morning, good morning, family. Welcome to this week's episode of Radio Establish Store Dress Life. What's buzzing, cousin?
Hey, I can't call it, baby. How you living?
Better. Okay, so I got myself into a situation. You got a lot of background noise. I got myself into a situation where I enrolled in 3 professional development courses. And in all honesty, that shit has been kicking my ass. So it's really been taken away from everything. Just life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, the whole nine. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know my name most days. Sleep is not a friend of mine. Eating is not a friend of mine. There have been days where I was like, damn, did I eat today? You know what I mean? Like, fuck it, I'll eat later. I need sleep. You know what I'm saying? Grabbing 10 minutes here, grabbing 2 hours there. Just been getting a brother through. And so work's been busy. But I tell you what, we done had some good-ass weather, which has been crazy here lately. But today, here it is, beautiful day in general, but it's calmed down and cooled down like a mofo, and that's okay, because I would take the sun and the cool over the rain and or the damn snow and the cold, so I can live with all that. We are just days away from electing our next president of the United States of America. as we all know, the choices that we have are Hillary Rodham Clinton and the real Donald Trump, whomever that may be. And I say that sarcastically because he flip-flops and changes so damn much is ridiculous. The FBI Comey came out week before last Friday. Dropped a bombshell. Yeah, dropped a bombshell in the middle of the election, speaking toward emails that were obtained from former Senator Anthony Weiner's wife, who is high up in Hillary's campaign. She's like her right-hand person, to be honest with you, saying that those emails may contain more information that needs to be looked into. But that was just sloppy. And this is a case, an example of having it both ways, where when he came forth and did what he said and did for Hillary earlier on in the process, and the Democrats early on in the process, that seemed detailed, sought out, blah, blah, blah. And the Republicans were jumping up and down, pouncing, saying that, you know, he shouldn't have done that. Now he's come out and slighted Hillary, and the Republicans are jumping up and down saying he's regained his reputation. Okay, guys, which one is it? You know, so he lost his reputation when he went against you, but he's regained it because now he's doing something that could tilt votes toward your way. It's ugly. This is a sloppy election.
You said it's sloppy, but it's really not, man. It's kind of calculated in the sense that, you know, he knew, he already had people going against him releasing that information. He went against that for a reason. It's not saving humanity or nothing like that. It's not, you know, saving lives. It definitely impacts the election. And he knew that, so that's why he went ahead and released made a statement saying that, hey, there's more damning information out there, because that is the one thing that everybody is, you know, up in arms about when it comes down to Hillary Clinton. So it wasn't messy. It was calculated. It was wrong in the sense that it's going to have impact on the election. And, you know, for the people, you know, on the outside looking in, it's like, dang, oh, that's messed up. How could you, you know, just do something like this, like, right before the election? But if you don't want, you know, her in office, then it's really not messy. You're going to throw out all types of crap.
Right.
And it's effective. Because, again, all of a sudden, for a week, that's all we talked about.
Right. But I say it's messy, not only because of that. The fact that we have the candidates that we have is messy. The fact that one of the candidates is that's not true. He behaves like a 12-year-old. Damn, did I just say which one it was? Behaves like a 12-year-old, is constantly on social media ranting and raving about things that a person whom desires to be the leader of the free world should not be ranting and raving about. But it is. He is. Both camps have come under some type of scrutiny. First, it was his campaign. Well, it wasn't campaign spokesperson first, whom left the trail because, you know, he attacked somebody. And let's be real. That's what the hell happened. He attacked somebody, and that whole court process is going on, so they dropped him like a hot potato to get away from that drama. And then now it was his campaign manager not too long ago whom they dropped because he's being investigated for ties to dealings with Russia. And they hired the young lady, and I'm sorry, her name just escapes me right now. It'll come to me more than likely as we continue to talk. Kellyanne. See, that's how it happens. It came right back to me. Kellyanne comes forward, and they put her face and plaster her face and voice everywhere because they want to show that Trump is for women, about women. He can, women like him, so on and so forth. And here she goes, trying to defend this man as best as she can because she's getting paid. And I'm pretty sure she's getting paid rather well to defend this idiot But that's neither here nor there. So now, here we go again. These damn emails and Hillary Clinton with her emails. Look, I'm an independent, registered, whole nine. I don't give a damn about an email at this point. At this point, it's about whom will keep us safe, whom will continue to build on record numbers that are being set by the Obama administration as far as unemployment are concerned, as far as growth of the economy is concerned. Who is going to be able to do that? You know, will I be able to continue to get a job after the next president comes into place? Not that the president has that much power. However, people are nervous about whom the next president is going to be. The Mexican government has put in a contingency plan. Listen to that again. The Mexican government has put in a contingency plan if Donald Trump wins on Tuesday. Why? Because as his numbers have gone, so has their economy. As his numbers have grown, their economy has dipped. His rhetoric toward Mexico and the Mexican people have dragged down the peso by 9%. By 9%, this motherfucker alone has dragged down the economic stability of a country, a sovereign nation, by 9%. That's not all him. Let's be real. That is the keg in which he's sitting on and has the match, and he continues to play with the match near the, what would that thing be, cousin? That would, the striker, I guess, or the, you know, the stick of dynamite, the piece that, you know,
the
wick.
Wick.
The wick, there it is, the wick, there you go, the wick. You know, and there's a lot of hate in this fucking world, man. And, you know, we can sit back and we can claim to be a Christian nation, which we aren't, because if we were, then we wouldn't behave like we behave. So let's stop that bullshit, first and foremost. We can complain to be a progressive nation, which we're not. We are a conservative nation as a whole. Even me and all my rhetoric and this, that, and forth, independence and all that jazz, I have a pretty conservative life. You know, most of the things that I do are steeped in some type of tradition. You might not agree with the tradition that they're steeped in, but they are. They're steeped in some type of tradition that's been longstanding, and I follow that trend. Now, I'm not so blind as to, you know, follow every trend, to believe in everything, just because it was there before I got there. But at the same time, I'm not so pig-headed that I got to fight every damn battle or skirmish just because I want to have my say. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. But we have a large contingent of folks here in the United States of America whom feel jaded. They have been sold the idea because let's be real. I totally agree. The media is a puppet for those in control. And those who follow and live off of everything said in the media are being played by the powers that be. And the powers that be are the people with money. Wars are fought by people that don't have money for the people that have money in order to protect their shit. You know, look at Vietnam. Just take that for a prime example. We're over here fighting right, left, every angle, yet we can't go into Laos and we can't go in Cambodia. Why? Why can't we go to those places? Because they had oil fields. That's why we can't go there. We didn't want the oil fields destroyed. You think that a broke person was worried about destroying the oil fields? Hell to the no. They didn't give a damn. What they were worried about was somebody was shooting them from those oil fields, and since those oil fields were protected, they couldn't destroy it. That was their concern. You know, I tell you when I'm on,
so,
I'm on it. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, no. So I'm really interested on the fact that on the part where you talked about being a Christian nation,
I actually got into it with one of my partners on Facebook. Now he normally thinks against the norm. You know, he has, you know, different points of views, and I normally look, I normally read a lot of that stuff, and I think about it for a second. You know, most of the time when I read his post. But this particular day, he went on this rant about how we're a Christian nation and how he has to vote for Donald Trump because he in quote said, God has chosen Donald Trump. He is the chosen one by God himself. And I lost my daggone mind, bro. And, you know, after I lost my mind and I regained consciousness and yeah, I went back to my informed self, all I can think about was the comment about us being a Christian nation. You know, so besides the fact that, you know, I'm sure that God wouldn't allow people to be enslaved for hundreds of years and whipped and beaten and hung and massacred and stuff like that. I'm sure God wouldn't allow that, you know, being a Christian nation and all. But everything in 2016 shows that we're not a Christian nation. You know, being a Christian is about expressing love, expressing forgiveness, expressing fellowship, brotherhood. But when you look at these Donald Trump rallies, nothing about these rallies are Christian. These people are filled with hate. That you can see the hate in their eyes. You can see the anger in their eyes. You can see, you know, when they chant "Make America Great Again," they say it with anger. It's not about pride. It's not about togetherness. It's not about unity. It's not about brotherhood. It's not about love. This is about hate and regaining dominance. And when you look at the contrast, and you look at Hillary Clinton's rallies, they're peaceful rallies. It's not a whole bunch of hateful rhetoric, you know, thrown at Donald Trump and his camp or the Republicans or people who are going with Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton has made the mistake a couple of times in saying some bad things about Donald Trump's supporters. But in its entirety, the two camps run totally different campaigns as far as the atmosphere that they present. So, again, I'm like, a Christian nation. Now, I'm not, you know, super religious. You know, I'm more spiritual than I am religious. But from the Christians that I know that God is supposed to be, that we're supposed to be, that's the hate and the anger and the violence isn't what Christianity is about. Now, when he makes a statement about, you know, make America great again, and they talk about being a Christian nation, when I look at it from their lenses, I'm looking at it from the time of slavery, because that's when those kind of Christians, that's when America was great last, because they had the control, they had the dominance, they had the power. So for them, that was greatness, because it wasn't equal power. You know, right now, today we have, you know, more black people in prominent positions. We have, you know, political figureheads. Like, for example, like the lady Angela Rye, who's always on CNN, killing the game. Young black sister, educated, they can't touch her. And the white folks on the show, she's calm, collected, educated, speaking, you know, kicking knowledge, and they get mad. They want to start yelling and screaming at her. I mean, these people are afraid of losing power. And the majority has definitely become the minority in the sense that they don't have the power anymore. They outnumber us, but they definitely don't have the power that they once had.
Stop. Do you really think they outnumber us? In all honesty, do you really think that? If you say in one swoop that they fear losing power and dominance, and then you come back and say they outnumber us, that doesn't add up to me. It doesn't compute. See, my thing is,
because power is a mindset.
But in that, right, here you go with if we report that there are more of them than there is of us, can you understand the magnitude of that fear factor? Versus saying, well, in another 15, 20 years, there'll be more of them than it is of us. So now we give people an opportunity and time to prepare for it. We give them time to prepare. They have that time, like they understand that it's coming versus saying, well, in all honesty, there are more of them than it is of you right now. There's just more of them. I see it. I mean, I see it as being a falsehood. I really do. I don't think that power wants to rescind that position of strength. And that position of strength is, well, at least for now, there are more of us than there is of you. And we will choose to report that there's more of us than is of you. Because let's be real. There are a lot of people of color that are staying below the radar because they are illegal immigrants. They're not supposed to be here. So they're staying below the radar. You know, so you take that house that you go up to and you count it as one person, but it's eight people that live there. The other seven were hiding. They were out that day and you were coming. So, boom. You multiply that out a couple of times and you start to get some really good hefty numbers that cannot be discredited by other people. Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, I agree with that possibility, but only thing we can work on. Well,
is what's reported.
We can work at it both ways, huh?
I said, is what's reported.
Yeah. But I mean, that's
no.
What
I'm just continuing your point.
Yeah, I mean, but either way it goes, even if they don't have the greater population,
mm-hmm.
the feeling is that they still have or they had the power and dominance. And
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, they realize that they've lost, not losing, that they've lost that dominance. They've lost that power. You know, I think that even if the reporting is off, most of us aren't thrown off by the presence of white America. You know, I think, especially since President Obama been in office, I think people of color have been empowered and motivated and, let me see, and I'll say encouraged to seek more, to want more, to become more, and to be more. I think ever since Obama's been in office, it's been, well, hey, I can do this. You know, his whole slogan was, yes, we can. And I think since, he became president, people of color have really, like, took off. You know, and it was a ball that started off real small, and we had hope, and we had a possibility. And then that hope became a reality. And then it became one, like the whole cliche, like, you know, well, if he can do it, then so can I. Well, if President Obama can become president, then I could become, the owner of a bakery shop. If President Obama can become a president, then I can become a lawyer. And, it took hold on so many people of color that, again, they don't want a woman to now be a president because it's bad enough that the black folks became, good. You know, we still got kind of an upper hand on black women because even in the black culture, black women are, according to them, black women are beneath black men. So I can deal with working with black men because we're men, so we're going to stick together. But we got to hold off on this woman shit because now if women take hold, then we're going to lose our white women and we're going to lose control of the black women or people or women of color. So black men, I would say, but I think that's the biggest proponent for the hate and the anger that's being projected. So white men are the people who are really, really, really afraid of what's going on in the loss of power.
For me, it's that and losing their women. I mean,
right.
As a man, but as a man, your first duty, other than God, is to protect your women. You know, so here you go, and the whole dynamic of relationships has changed. All right, so Lovin' is coming out, or has already been released, one of the two. And it's the story of the first legally married interracial couple during the civil rights era. Black female, white male, from Northern Virginia, I want to say Alexandria, if memory serves me properly. From Northern Virginia, because I learned about them years ago, right? So, the movie ain't nothing for me. But from Northern Virginia, and they wanted to get married, and they had a couple kids, I think two daughters, again, if memory serves me properly, two daughters.
There's a black man and white woman, right?
No, the opposite, black woman, white male. But anyway, I think they had two daughters, and it was against the law for a white male to marry a black female. And I want to say it was in, it's either in, I was going to say Ferguson, listen to my ass. I was thinking Springfield, Virginia, Northern Virginia, or I was thinking, what did I just say? My goodness, I see Alexandria. So they were in that area, and, you know, they were going back and forth, hiding their love, hiding one another, honestly, because there were times when she had to go back home with the kids to show, well, because they were being sought after to find out if they were actually living together and there was fines and they would have gone to jail and all this other type of shit, so... it's crazy, man. The case went to the Supreme Court. It was just absolutely bonkers and bananas. Now, I love all people. I have no hate for anybody, in all honesty. As a people, I don't have any hate for any group of people. I do have hate for individuals. I will fess to that 100%. But as a group of people, I don't really hate any group of people. But I prefer to live my life. Yeah, I prefer to live my life and my love life with someone who looks like me. That is my preference. And I don't feel ill toward that or about that because I understand, and I had this conversation a couple of weeks ago. I understand I'm not American, and that sounds ill, but the truth of the matter is, as Brother Thomas Berry has put it and labeled himself, he is a incidental citizen. I'm sorry, an unintended citizen, and we are unintended citizens. We were never supposed to be a part of this society. We were brought here to be slaves, to be cattle. You know, we were brought here to be traded and sold, not to actually become members of the society. So I am an accidental citizen. And as such, I have to change my mindset. I have to adjust my mindset to the mindset of every other immigrant populace that has come to this nation. And the first thing that they do is expand their families from within. And then, as generations go down, they can do it from without. But initially, the first two or three are always expanded from within. More often than not, the first two or three are expanded from within, and then you go around, then you go out, and then you start to see and explore other people. I can't help you. You know, that's how I think. That's what I do. I don't hate anybody. But I don't hate anybody. It's just
right.
understanding the position that America has put myself and those who look like me in, and that is the position that we're in. You know, it is written on the wall at every turn. This is why we have a black president whom has been unable to really do much for the people that look like him. Because if he did, he wouldn't have won the second go around.
Right.
He would not have won the second go around.
Let's go there for a second, man. That's something that kind of pisses me off, man. And I understand it. It sounds nice if President Obama was able to come in and be like, you know what, everything I do, I'm doing for black people. Every black problem that we have, I'm going to resolve it. I'm going to put my stamp on it, and it's mine. Like, I did it. I was the black president. I was the black people. I was the president for the black people. And that sounds nice, you know, in a dream. That would be perfect to be like, you know what, this man just came in and he saved the day. And he did everything that I wanted him to do for me and my family and people who look like me. But the reality of it is he's the president of the United States of America. That means he's the president of all citizens. Were there some areas that he could have done better in? Of course. Were there some areas that people may not agree with? Of course. But when you look at its entirety of his, you know, through his whole entire president, he's done a great damn job in protecting the interests of America, not just black folks and not white folks or not just Hispanics or Asians, all of the people of the United States. When you talk about job creation is for black folks too. Just like it's for white folks and Asians and Hispanics and whatever your nationality is. And again, since he's been in office, like we talked about this before, the unemployment rate has dropped and job creation has risen every single year.
4.9%.
You know what I'm saying? Every 4.9%. Year he's been in office. So how you can't deny that. So don't black folks, don't you have jobs? You know, say don't. I know I have a great damn job that I never thought I would have before. So I would like to say thank you, President Obama, for allowing me the opportunity. But again, in some areas, you know, he didn't accomplish things. Did he not do enough for HBCUs or anything for HBCUs for that matter? Maybe not. Well, he didn't. But the fact of the matter is, he's done a lot for education in general. Starting from early childhood literacy, that's the pipe that will be the pipeline to getting kids to go to HBCUs. So no, he may not have done anything directly as far as funding, but he's done a lot to stabilize our future and our economy. And I think that HBCUs will benefit from it later on instead of now. But again, it frustrates me when. Again, you have this man in office, and you expect him to be a savior when he's not in that position to be a savior. He has, from day zero, the Republicans and even some white Democrats wanted him to fail. The Republicans went on the record and said that we will do everything in our power to not have this man succeed. That's hate. That's not. Hey, we lost the, you know, we lost the election. We need to protect our interests. These folks went on record stating that they would do everything in their power to make sure that he does not succeed from day zero. This wasn't in retaliation for President Obama doing something against the Republicans or vetoing a bill or something like that. No, this was day zero. We can't let this happen. We're going to do everything in our power to make sure that this president is not successful on day zero. So you expect for this man who doesn't have, you know, really any power, contrary to what people believe, to come in and be the savior of a whole race when he has everything stacked against him. Yeah, I would like to say that to accomplish anything with those odds makes you a success. And then you just build from that point forward. And recognize that along the way, you're going to have some roadblocks and you're going to lose some battles, you're going to win some battles. So what you do in that position, knowing that the odds are stacked against you, you go ahead and you find a way to get some kind of resolution. Now, we don't know if President Obama had some kind of bill in place to save HBCUs. We don't know that at all, because all we see is the end result. All we see is the fact that it didn't happen. But we don't know if he had some kind of plan in place to fund HBCUs and save the HBCUs, just like the housing market and the automobile industry was saved. Guess what? White folks don't care about HBCUs. They care about automobiles and homes because they're in real estate and they're in manufacturing of automobiles. So, again, I mean, you have to pick your battles. And as the President of the United States, you can't look at a situation and say, I'm going to do something for one, but not for all.
And again, I'm not mad about that.
Immigration laws. Yeah, but like immigration laws, you know, you got, you know, there are white immigrants, you know, people that come from England, you know, to the United States, they're called immigrants. You know, they're white folks too. So people come from Africa. You know, they're not citizens, they're immigrants. So immigration laws, you know, aren't just for Muslims. But that's what we want to hold on to, because that's what the rhetoric is and the fear tactics tell you, or the scare tactics tell you to be afraid of, is be afraid of the Muslims. But the Europeans can come in droves, and, you know, people from, you know, Poland can come. It's cool. But the Muslims, man, we gotta watch out for them. Them dark Muslims too. Go ahead.
And that leads to a funny story. So I had one of my guys the other day. I said, do me a favor, go out and get another one of my employees. And he said, I don't know what that is. I said, man, new guy, light skinned brother, short. And I said, I don't know what that is. Okay, yo, look. Light skinned brother, short, da da da, looks like a terrorist. He's like, oh, got you. So he went out and grabbed this other cat. Looks like a terrorist, though. So he went out and grabbed another cat and brought him in and said, oh, yo, this is what he's talking about. No. I was like, no, that ain't even, that's not him at all. I said, oh, but that's what you said. I was like, no, dog. So I started dying, dog. So I'm like, yo, so you say he look like a terrorist? He said, absolutely. I said, Lord have mercy.
Equal opportunity policy.
Oh, yeah. So I told the dude, I was like, yo, look, let me tell you something. I said, what? He said, what? I said, I'm going to tell you this joke. He said, what? I said, yo, I asked the dude to go out and get you. Right? He's like, right. He said, but he didn't know what the fuck he was. So I was trying to describe him and shit. And I was like, yo, the little light skinned dude. He's like, I said, yo, the longest terrorist. He's like, oh, okay. So why are you going to get somebody else? He's like, yo, hold on. You call me a terrorist? I ain't calling you a terrorist. I said, you look like a terrorist. Oh my God, it's hilarious, dog. We laugh about that shit to this day. It was funny as hell. But okay, let's not only go on the Europeans is coming in the nation, the Muslims is coming in the nation. Let's not forget that the Latinos coming in the nation have been a huge target of the Republican nominee as well, and that's causing them a huge problem. You know, look. When Mexico's director of the central bank gets on and talks about the contingency plan that Mexico as a nation has put into place because of Donald Trump, that's a problem. That is a sovereign nation has developed a contingency plan based on the possibility of the election of a U.S. president, and how that election will have devastating effects upon their economy. That is a problem. That's a problem. Now, going back to what you said about President Obama, I'm not asking that he should have done everything for black people in this country. No. But there are a couple of concrete things that he could have done easily within his first 100 days to 6 months, whatever, and really helped the other people, America's others. there are situations where he just didn't get it, as you said, HBCUs and their funding. He didn't understand that, man. He came in with his team. They were trying to save money because we were bleeding heavily. We were bleeding heavily. We took his pen, and he was never – I'm sorry. We were bleeding heavily. He came in. He took the reins. He said, let's save America. Do what you need to do. His team came back with proposals. Those proposals have had long-term effects on HBCUs, African Americans, Latinos, white folks, you name it. They have had long-term effects. You know, he's getting blasted right now because of the Obamacare rate hike, right? And the American Affordable Health Care Act, by the way. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call it Obamacare. Well, as you said, Cuzzo, let's go back to the beginning. If he had more support from the Republicans, the other side of the aisle, when this whole thing was going through, now you get everybody saying, okay, look, yo, we know you don't want this, but as a nation, we need this. Let's sit down. Let's make some real tough decisions about what it's going to take in order to make this work. You wouldn't be seeing jokers just hop out of the exchange because there would have been a clause in there somewhere saying, if you hop out of the exchange, okay, there's a penalty for you getting out. Now, do you want to pay that penalty or do you want to stay in and keep that dough coming in? You see, these jokers are hopping in and out because they don't want to actually lose a smidgen of profit share. That's all. Because now they have to take on people that they didn't have to take on before. So they gambled heavily on themselves that they would win. Because the majority of the people that came in were already healthy. They had to be healthy. If they weren't healthy, they could deny them previous conditions. So the majority of people that's on their plan, you know they're going to live to 70-plus, 80-plus. 90-plus. You can collect a little bit of dough from them because over time, that's all going to add up. When you got somebody coming in and they're in their teens, their early 20s, and they're already sick, it's like a microwave counting down. Like, how long is it going to be until we bury you? Well, guess what? I got to bury you. 36 other people like you. And then I got to worry about the top of the spectrum of the people that I already had in the plan who are in their 70s, 80s, 90s, 100s, whatever. I got to bury them too, man. That's too much money I'm losing. I'm losing way too much money. I'm paying way too much out. What do y'all think this is, insurance? Of course it is, fucker. You know, but it's all a game, man. It's all a game. And these jokers don't want to pay out. Because they understand it's a game. So they will violate you for doing something small or trivial. They'll kick you out.
That's another argument that I hate having. Because, you know, it's real easy. When the controversial topic is presented, right? You have one or two experts or people who say they're experts that speak out about it, right? They kick out.
Mm-hmm.
So you have one person who's for, one person who's against. If I'm against something, I'm not going to tell you everything that's good about it. I'm going to tell you everything that's bad about it. And I'm going to leave the good stuff up to the person who's for it. And, you know, hopefully, and that's where the debate goes. You know, that's how the debate goes. You know, we tell your side, I tell my side, whoever can get that point across the best wins the debate, right? But then the people who are listening to the debate, they're so-called becoming experts in a matter of moments. Whereas the people who are doing the debates, again, if I'm against, I'm an expert in what's against,
right,
the situation, and I still know everything about the situation. But again, mm-hmm. I'm going to promote everything that's against it. But I'm an expert in the situation in its entirety.
So the people listening, they become experts on whatever side they choose in a matter of moments, instead of looking at, or instead of appreciating the time that the fact that the person that's presenting it has studied this for months to years at a time. Now, I say all that to say this. I've been in healthcare for about 10 years now. I'm familiar with billing. I'm familiar with, you know, RVUs and how providers get paid, and you know, if the patient doesn't have health insurance, where that funding comes from. Doctors get paid all the damn time, period. Nothing is ever free. If you're coming to the ER with a gunshot wound, and mm-hmm. they don't, it's not like the horror stories back in the day where they run your daggone, they run your Social Security number, and they realize you don't have insurance, they don't take care of you. Those days are gone. You come into a facility, mm-hmm. you get treated. If you don't have insurance, I still get paid. Period. It might take me a little while longer because I got to, you know, we got to fill out paperwork and go through resource management and all the stuff like that and all this other crap. But the people against Obamacare will lead you to believe that this thing is horrible again because of the change. But if you look at the history of anything as far as insurance is concerned, automobile insurance was not always mandatory. But anytime somebody had an accident, destroyed the roads, destroyed a car, you know, taxpayers had to absorb that bill. Just like with healthcare. You know, somebody gets sick, they go to a doctor's office, they don't have insurance, services are still rendered. Guess what? The taxpayers absorb those bills. You know, and it's a pay now or pay later type of scenario. You don't want your taxes to increase, but then you don't want to be held responsible for people who go into healthcare facilities with no insurance. But then it's inhumane if we don't treat people who don't have health insurance and we let them die. Or we don't give them the services that they really need, and you know, at the end of the day, they end up dying. So where do you win at? When you look at affordable care, it's about stabilizing the economy. And I've said this before on the show about Roosevelt, how he brought the same kind of presentation to Congress when he was in office. And again, they kicked it back because as far as businessmen are concerned, it was going to impact them. But as the president of the United States, your responsibility is to protect the people, not the interests of individuals. So he brought it forward. Congress denied it. Other countries saw it like, oh, man, this shit is awesome. We need to try this. What can we lose? They tried it out. They loved it. It stabilized their economy. Now, our economy might be richer because we're businessmen, you know, at heart. Our country is based off of business fundamentals. So in regards to that, yeah, it's that, you know, right now businessmen are impacted by it. But as far as our economy will be more stable in the next military conflict that we have, the next natural disaster that we have that wipes out that, you know, that destroys a whole freaking state for the most part. You know, our economy will be more stable. It might not be as strong as it used to be, and it will get back there. But again, it's really easy to look at all the negative sides to something instead of looking at everything that's tidy. Do I like having to pay as much as I do for freaking health insurance right now? No, I don't like it, but I will adjust and I will adapt my life to making that a priority. And that's the way it should have always been that way. Our health should have always been a priority, but it hasn't been. We've neglected our health, and therefore we pay for it as a country later on. Yeah. All right. I've seen the vlogs leave on. But, people, again, it's really easy to sit back and complain. But the fact of the matter is, again, the President of the United States isn't responsible for helping us think. When you talk about the stimulus packages,
you know, again, it was about stabilizing the economy. Let's flood the market with some money, and we hope that the people, you know, put it back into the community. Did it happen that way? Not necessarily. Some people got afraid about the situation that we were in, and they went ahead and either saved most of it or they paid off bills and stuff like that. But I don't think that it's fair, again, to say that President Obama did not do anything for HBCUs when, again, if he's protecting youth education, if he's protecting intermediate education, and he's, you know, protecting, you know, high school education, don't you think that that trickles down to the HBCUs? Don't you think that the HBCUs will benefit from having kids prepared for school opposed to kids coming into school unprepared and flunking out, you know, wasting taxpayers' dollars, you know, not really you know, not taking it serious, of course, and, you know, again, just racking up bills that they can't pay. You know, they're getting student loans left and right, halfway going to school, halfway going through college. They flunk out of college. They got student loans that they can't pay back. Therefore, that adds to our debt. Or would you want them to be successful, go to any school, get nice jobs when they graduate from school, and put money back into the market? Again, that was one of my dreams, was to go to a HBCU. But guess what? I never heard about HBCUs outside of my own research. But when you watch TV, you will always see, you know, commercials, especially now, commercials for all types of universities. I mean, some universities don't have to put commercials out because their name stands for themselves. But you will see billboards for University of Maryland. You will see billboards for, you know, Towson, Morgan State University, which is the HBCU. But again, locally, I'm there. I see it. But
well, a lot of that, though, came from the ending of the Cosby Show. Because, you know, when in my years coming
right.
up, going into
that era,
you had that example of what college life looked like. You had example of people that looked like you on college campuses and the ups and downs and the turn faults, the turning of that. So you had reruns after the Cosby Show. If you notice, you didn't have a lot of syndication for A Different World. There was not a lot of syndication for A Different World at all. You know, so again, that's control. That's a control mechanism designed to keep people in a certain place, if you will. And it worked. It worked. There was a study I read a couple of weeks ago, because they were talking about like the 30th anniversary of A Different World or some crap like that. And it was like, yo, college enrollment just went down the tank after The Cosby Show and A Different World went down. It did. It went off air. It went down the tank. Never have gotten back to those levels again. Never has gotten back to those levels again. So,
and that's my point. Like,
we'll see.
Whose responsibility is that? It's not the TV show. It's not the network's responsibility to keep that conversation
going.
No,
not at all. Not at all. That's at home.
Right. That's at home. It's at home, and it's at the institution's level also. Again,
mm-hmm.
these presidents of these institutions have been getting paid millions of dollars. You know, they got all types of funding going on for research and stuff like that. They do great things. But you can't put a billboard up in a black community saying, come to Howard University? You can't do that?
Mm-hmm.
A billboard. Right. I'm not saying do a whole, you know, a whole daggone commercial run. I'm not saying that. But you can't put a damn billboard. You can't come to my school and say, hey, come to Howard University, and you 45 minutes to an hour away from my house. You can't come to my school and do that?
How about a Facebook blast?
Yeah. You know, I see freaking Grand Canyon University left and right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I see Western Governors University left and right.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, like, you can't tell me that it's President Obama's fault for not saving HBCUs when HBCUs not trying to save themselves. They okay. You're okay with sitting back and being the bottom of the totem pole in regards to education, educational population, popularity. It used to be jumping back in the day, Lee. I remember back in the day when you know, cats used to wear the Morgan State sweaters and the Howard sweaters and the Hampton sweaters and the hoodies and the hats and the hoodies. It was jumping. And again, like that was the Cosby Show era and the Different World era. But again, it was prideful. We were the advertisements. So back then they didn't have to really, you know, they didn't have to do the marketing themselves because we marketed it for them. But times changed, right? Now it's not the fashion changed. It's not cool like it used to be to wear the HBCU, gear. That was cool back then. It was punk.
I don't give a damn. I still wear mine.
No, but man, you never really, you know, you never swayed away from that. You've always represented, you know, and I'm gonna say black power in a sense. You've always done that, Tuskegee Airmen and stuff like that. You know, Negro League. You've always done that. But that's you. Again, you don't speak for black people.
Right.
Just like President Obama don't speak for black people necessarily. You know, I mean, he's a great image. But again, you can't say that he's done nothing. But again, we don't know what kind of policies or what kind of, you know, acts that he had prepared that was shot down. We don't know. All we see is what did not happen. But even with that, man, I don't give a damn if we have a freaking president straight from Africa. It doesn't matter, bro. If these institutions aren't willing to help themselves, which they've not, they've sat down and done nothing prior to President Obama, during President Obama's tenure, and they're going to do the same thing after President Obama's tenure and look for somebody to save them. Again, Penn State University don't have to worry about that. You know, Virginia, University of Virginia doesn't have to worry about that.
Right.
Because they go out there and they recruit. They go to the schools. And again, there's no reason why I had schools from Georgia coming to visit Southwestern High School, but I can't get Morgan State University to come to my school and recruit. That's ridiculous.
Do you think it's similar to how folks feel about the Democratic Party and taking the Latino and the African American vote for granted? You know, because they were so close. Because they were so close, they just took it for granted that you would come to them versus them having to come to you.
Right, because I think it's like the Obama effect in a sense. A lot of people voted for President Obama just because he was black. And then
right.
I didn't give a damn about policies. It was like, yo, we got an opportunity. Hey, let's go. I'm on the side of history instead of future. All right. And then some people kind of started regretting certain things because of things that he missed, right? But yeah, definitely, we assume so much, and we're just assuming that okay, you know, the black community, they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton because guess what, Hillary Clinton is a surrogate in the sense of President Obama, and because President Obama was this, and then you know now we have a chance to again. You know, sum up to white boy, you know, we can sit back on the black and Hispanic vote because we know they're going to vote for us. But more and more, I see more black folks on Donald Trump's side. I see black celebrities. Ice Cube, who was a prominent voice, he's endorsing freaking Donald Trump. You don't think that shit's going to be impactful on election day?
No, he didn't.
Ice Cube? Yeah.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't.
Okay.
Check that story again. It came out, and Cube took the Twitter
it.
And was like, I wouldn't. Okay. Okay. Okay.
No, he not. Is he sitting there? Is he sitting there with a Trump hat on, and saying, you know, make America great again? No, he ain't that kind of endorser. But he definitely endorsed Donald Trump.
Mm. we'll get back to that because anyhow. All right, so Tuesday's the day. If you're not registered, depending on what state you're in, you can still register that same day. But Ohio is being contested already because Trump and his campaign and one of his surrogates have tried to pull the okey-doke on in Ohio. So federal judge James Gwynn of the U.S. District Court, North District of Ohio, issued a temporary restraining order against Trump and Roger Stone, Stop the Steal. Stop the Steal sought to get early restraining orders, limits on ballot security, and voter questioning efforts. The injunction from the judge prevents the hindrance of, or delaying voters from reaching or leaving polling places, unauthorized poll watching. Now, if you remember in Trump's speech, he was saying, you know, we got to go out, we got to watch the polls, we got to watch the polls, we got to watch the polls. Well, pollsters are only allowed within 50 feet or 100 feet, it'll come to me, of a polling place. You have to give the individual space to vote without feeling intimidation or without being coached. So this here is about preventing people from trying to get too close, dropping gems in your head. Training, organizing, diverting, directing others to do the same, which comes to challenging or questioning a voter's eligibility to vote. Can't do that either. Interrogating, admonishing, interfering with, or verbally harassing voters. This is another thing that the Stop the Steal campaign was looking to do. That, in my belief, comes from the proximity clause. You know what I'm saying? They wanted to be extremely close to voters. They wanted to be able to ask voters once they exited, who do they vote for, why, blah, 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 blah. So this vote, this makes it illegal for that to happen as well. It also applies to the Clinton campaign and camp. So it's definitely across the board. We've already heard about the purges in North Carolina where thousands of voters were purged from the voting list and the lawsuit filed against that. This is a sloppy election. I said that earlier. I'll say it again. This is a sloppy election because I see the handwriting on the wall because Trump is going to refuse that he got dumped. So he's going to want to fight, claw for every vote, or recount, maybe another. I'm sorry, a count, maybe another recount, and a recount after that. I just don't see this cat going away with grace and with style and or with dignity. He's already said that he would have to reevaluate the election if he was not elected. He would have to look at that before saying if he would validate the results of the election or not. How in the hell did we wind up here? How? And in this case, I have to blame the DNC, Democratic National Committee, the Clinton campaign, because they stifled Bernie and they totally blocked Joe. Totally blocked Joe and stifled Bernie. You know, let's be honest. Right now, someone is sitting home preparing for their presidential bid in 2020. That's what someone is doing right now. Bernie didn't seem like he did that to, you know, build up his war chest, so on and so forth. Trump is riding off of the wave of hate. That's what he's riding off of. That's the only thing that can describe this. He is not handpicked by God. I disagree with you, cousin, on how you can't see God doing this, that, and the third. I can see it because the God of the New Testament was a hell of a lot more soft than the God of the Old Testament. This is the cat that put plagues in place, that, you know, killed a whole lot of folks in order to prove a point. You need to come to me.
Well, see,
a whole lot
right
of
there.
Folks. Mm-hmm.
Now, so, hold on. I got excited when you said it now, and I lost it that daggone fast. But Cat Brother Prophet, I watched him a couple of times, and that falls in line with the point that he was making one time, where people take the you know, if you believe in God, you take the actions of God and say that God is punishing me, and that's what happened with the plagues. You know, it was a punishment type thing. So I'm not going to believe that God was punishing slaves or punishing Africans by enslaving them. And it was, again, because that's what the colonial Christians will want you to believe, that, hey, look, you need to believe what I believe. And if you don't, this is why you're in your position, because what you believe in is wrong. So you're being punished by God. That's why you're a slave. And to me, that doesn't jive with the idea of what God is. To me.
And I understand that. I mean, I totally understand that. I just think and hope that, well, I shouldn't say hope. I just think that, you know, the God of the Old Testament was gangster. And let's not forget that, you know, Tracy Morgan spoke to that in an interview that he had with the Breakfast Club a couple weeks. I think it was last week, actually. They posted the interview that Tracy Morgan was in. And, you know, folks were asking him about the incident and, well, not the incident, the accident that almost took his life away, and how he was doing, so on and so forth, and how he got through it and all that type of jazz. A couple things came out of that really caught my ear. First thing was, there were not a lot of pictures of him as he went through the process that were leaked at all, none whatsoever that I'm aware of. And he was like, yo, my wife and my kids didn't need to see that. You know what I'm saying? I was insulated. I'm surrounded by people who love me, and they would not allow anything like that to happen. And I was serious about that. You don't need to know everything. And unfortunately, we live in a time in a society right now where everybody wants to know everything. Everyone wants to be all up in everybody's business. You don't need to know everything. You know, my wife and kids didn't need to see nothing like that. I'm healed. I'm fine. I'm better. And that's all that matters. Another thing he said was, you know, I know God. And I think that I was able to survive because God wasn't through with me. He sent me back down here to continue to do what I'm doing, which is spreading love. You know, that's why I'm here. I'm here to continue to spread love. And that really hit me. And, you know, he was like, oh, look. You know, I've always been a believer of God. You know, God ain't no punk, though. Let's be honest. You know, nothing happens for no reason. There's always a reason. We don't have to understand, and that's cool. You know, but God wasn't ready to turn me over to the devil yet, and there was no way the devil's going to be able to get to me, because let's remember who created him. God. God ain't no punk. You know what I'm saying? So that really, really, really hit me. You know, that hit me along with the Brangelina divorce. So, you know, Brad Pitt has filed a counter divorce claim in L.A. Superior Court against
hold
Angelina
for a
Jolie.
Hold on a second, brother. You went from talking about Tracy Morgan, how he was saved by God, to transitioning to use that as a segue to talk about Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt's divorce.
Yeah, see how smooth that was?
Now, I know that they save a lot of kids in Africa and stuff like that, and they like saviors to these kids, but I don't think they're synonymous
saints.
With you. I don't think they're synonymous with
it's their saintly ways.
Tracy Morgan getting saved by God.
It's their saintly ways that was the connection for me. Work with me, brother. Work with me. Don't slow me down. The train is over.
Let me.
The train is over. You know, foolish. That worked out for me. I played that all together. God dang, man. Let the train roll.
I know. I'm speaking on behalf of the listeners. I know somebody sitting there like, what the hell is he talking about? But go ahead, bro. Let me hear.
Thank you. All right, so six kids. If they had another one, it would have been perfect, right? The number seven, godly number. Anyhow, six kids they have together. be it through birth or adoption. And Brad has filed an injunction. Well, he filed a counter divorce claim in L.A. Superior Court, seeking joint physical custody for the kids. Joint custody, physical and otherwise. You know what I'm saying? And I applaud him for that. You know, there's not a lot of dudes out here that are willing to fight for their children's, to spend time with their children. You know, a lot of us, because the mother wigs out for whatever reason, be it we did something to motivate the wigging out, or they just wigged the fuck out because that was always in them and they wigged out. You know, we're like, well, you know, we're helpless and we're hopeless because she's the mother. What are the courts going to do? You know, they're always going to side with her. So this cat came through and said, look, I'm not going to do that. I want joint physical custody, joint visitation. I want to ask for more time to figure out where physically everybody's going to be because, you know, they have homes in France and New Orleans and other places, you know what I'm saying? So he asked for that. The only thing he said was there was irreconcilable differences between the two, and he left it at that. So, you know, I really applaud Brad Pitt, man. This dude is being classy about the whole situation. Angelina Jolie, she's being classy about the whole situation. This is not nasty at all at this point. Hopefully it doesn't turn nasty. It's not, you know, a lot of mudslinging, so on and so forth. Now, let's recall and remember that on 15 September of this year, Angelina Jolie filed for divorce initially. Now, the day previous, there was an incident on a private flight, which Brad Pitt is still under investigation for. It was a family matter. No one really knows what happened because the details have not been released. And neither one of them are talking, which, again, I applaud both of them for. This is a family issue. Though they are very public people, they still have a right to their private lives, and that's what's up. Now, on the other end of that spectrum, and we've talked about that before, we talked about this before, Mary J. Blige's husband is asking for spousal support from his wife. Now, mad folks are upset about that, and I'm sitting back like, why y'all mad? You know, because if the situation were reversed, you'd be jumping up and down talking about, yeah, girl, get whatever you can get. Well, guess what?
Right.
I'm jumping up and down saying, yeah, bro, get whatever the fuck you can get. Because guess what? She put you in a situation in which you live very comfortably. You got used to that scenario, and it is what it is. Now, you can look at me sideways. You can talk shit to me about, you know, but this is a man. He should be, look, motherfucker, at the end of the day, if it's there and you can do it, what's wrong? What's the matter? Now, Trump, when he came out the mouth with he pays zero taxes, I didn't jump up and down and say, you know, hey, man, that's some bullshit. I jumped up and down and said, hey, this is some bullshit that the system allows him to do that. What he did isn't wrong. The system is wrong. In this case, the system is wrong. Now, hopefully the system will correct itself from preventing anyone, male or female, from taking advantage of the other person's hard work and labor in the near future. Because that is some bullshit. I don't give a damn what happened when we got married. If you didn't build this motherfucker, you don't deserve to profit from it. In their case, they have absolutely no children. None. Why? You supported your damn self before we got together. Go right back to the home with the fuck you were doing.
Well, because I'm entitled to that.
Exactly.
That key word, man.
Exactly. And my thing is, why is he not? That's all I've asked. Why is he not? Because he's a he? It shouldn't matter. They're married. One has a hell of a lot more than the other. Why is he not the same?
You know damn well it's always a double standard when it comes down to relationships. You know, a man can do something and he's the worst
thing on the face of the earth. But a woman does it, the justification is, well, men do it all the time, so what?
Mm.
But the fact of the matter is, wrong is wrong, wrong is wrong, and right is right.
Wrong is wrong.
But, you know, when it comes down to it, man, you know, going back to the custody situation, you know, and me working with kids and stuff like that now, and me having my own personal experiences when it comes down to, you know, custody and you know, failed relationships and stuff like that. When it comes down to it, man, social services don't want you there as a man. You know, their caseload is based upon men not being there for the children and promoting, in a sense, single parents. You know, when it comes down to single moms, that's where the money is. So it's a lot of stuff wrong when the dad wants to be there and fight for the kids. That's wrong because you're messing up my money. And I'm talking about Department of Social Services. You know what I'm saying? You're messing up my bread.
Right.
I need you to stay away. So even though Angelina Jolie, is, you know, she's not going to fall into the case where people are making money off of him not being there, but because they're rich. But that goes against the way the system is set up, that it's better for men to not be there in regards to these caseworkers as opposed to men being empowered all of a sudden to say, hey, look, you know, I do have rights. Let me go fight for my kids and see what happens. You know, I might end up better off if I'm there. Because if I'm there, then I'll still have to pay. I might have to pay child support. But if I got joint custody, I don't have to pay child support. I can still take care of my kids, and I can be there and be a part of their lives. And you gotta, my God, you actually have to get a job or spend your money instead of spending your money on bags and shoes and clothes. You might actually have to spend your money on raising your kids. And I had to spend my money on raising the kids. So we have to adjust our lives equally. But if I don't get custody and you have full custody and I got visitation, I have to pay child. I have to pay you, in a sense, to see my kids. And that's what it boils down to. I'm paying to see my kids. Because if I don't pay my child support, and then we can go back to court, and then you can say, hey, he hasn't done anything. He hasn't paid his child support. I want to get the custody reviewed and readjusted. And then that goes against you because you're not a father because you don't pay money. But I think that being a father is not about money. It's about what I can give to my kids emotionally, what I can teach my kids and stuff like that, right? But that's not how the system is set up. The system is set up is that, you know, in the sense that money or the way you provide money or how much money you provide determines how good of a father you are. That's the way the system is set up. But it changes when men become educated and say, hey, look, I actually can be a father. I can actually do this. Because most men, because of the way, you know, history has shown, most men aren't, you know, when there's more single parents than there are single fathers. There are more fathers not in their kids' lives than there are fathers in their kids' lives. So the norm is fathers don't be there, moms raise the kids. That's the way our society has been over the last 20 or 30 years. For, you know, various different, you know, plenty of variables that play a part in that, but that's the norm. So, again, how dare you, you know, exercise your rights? How dare you get spousal support? How dare you ask for custody? How dare you try to be in your child's life because your relationship didn't work out? So because your relationship didn't work out, you're a bad father now. You know, it was a guy, last year who was actually sent to jail for like 6 months, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but he was actually sent to jail for overpaying his child support and spending too much time with his kid.
Was that in Memphis?
Shit, I don't know. I'll
look it up. Okay.
That's crazy. Like, how in the hell is that? How is that? How do you get sent to jail for being too good of a damn father? He violated the order. So I violated the order in a positive way,
and I get punished for it.
Hmm.
That's crazy.
It's the system. The system is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was Texas. It was Texas.
Houston, right?
Yeah. Here's the crazy thing. His name is Clifford Hall.
Huh?
Yep. That's our family name, so that's a running inside thing. So you all know what the hell we're talking about when we go off on that. You're like, what the hell does that mean? I'm Hall, it's a family thing.
I'll tell you, all right, so shit.
Oh Lord, have mercy. Don't say that. There's hope. All right, so let's continue to move down the sidelines and down the line. The CMAs, the Country Music Awards, happened this week, and racism took over the CMAs because Beyonce had the goal to step on stage at the CMAs. A lot of people loved it, but there were some people that didn't, and the CMAs bulked under the pressure and took all images of Beyonce being there down.
Oh, wow.
Every picture of her being there, they took it down. That's crazy, bro.
Black folks can't like country music.
You know, country music is a spinoff of R&B, which is rhythm and blues. Both of those are a spinoff of gospel, which is a spinoff of Negro spirituals. So, yeah, no, we can't like it, though we fathered it.
No,
we can't do that. Yeah, I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. Yeah.
But again, that goes back to what I was talking about earlier. When it comes down to losing control. God forbid Beyonce starts making some country music. Oh, my goodness. They ain't going to have nothing.
That would be hot.
I like some country music. Let me say this, I've heard country music that I like.
Okay.
And I can imagine if Jay-Z and Beyonce, I'm gonna see Jay-Z doing it. You know what I mean? He probably sing every once in a while.
Right.
He probably do some, do an appearance every once in a while. But ultimately, if Beyonce got into that, imagine who would follow. And how the new genre of country music that will be established from that. That would be amazing. But again, that power, man, they would. Oh my God, we can't even have country music. Come on, America. We'll see.
What's going on around here?
Yeah.
What's going on around here? Can't have nothing. I am eagerly waiting Wednesday morning. Much like the people of Chicago eagerly waited for over 100 years for the Cubbies to finally win the World Series. Shouts out to Chicago. There's been a lot of bad news coming out of Chicago, the murders, the killings, so on and so forth. But this is a unifying factor. This is a pride thing for an entire city. This is a pride thing for an entire state, to be honest with you. For years, the Cubs have been in the basement, and they have finally come out and done it. History was made either way, because if the Cleveland Indians had won, it had been, decades, I think 60, 70 years since they won. So either way, history was in the making. It was a wonderful, wonderful World Series. You couldn't ask for much better. You're talking about going in the extra innings. You're talking about a rain delay. I mean, it was crazy, crazy. But at the end of the day, the Cubbies won. And gotta send shouts out to them. There's some gelling starting to go on in the NBA world. Folks were confused, worried that there wouldn't be. But Golden State Warriors are starting to get themselves together. But also, the Cleveland Cavaliers are starting to play up to expectations. So, it's a very, very, very good season brewing. Looks like good seasons are brewing for both teams, and maybe we'll see a rematch of the two in the finals. You know, it's a long season. Anything can happen. Folks get hurt. Anything. You know, trades could happen. You just never know. But that's how it is. You can ask Giz. I sold your girl while you was in prison. That just came to my mind. Hip-hop is all over. EPMD was in town last night, so that got me motivated and some stuff. Outside of that, family, I don't have much more to talk about. I'm glad that we're back. I'm glad that we're on it. We'll do a special show on Tuesday to track the election and how it goes. The path to 270, because that's all one has to get in order to become president of the United States, 270 electoral votes. So we'll track the map and pathways to 270 for both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and see who comes out the winner. There's some dust kicking up and brewing in Europe because Brexit is actually being challenged. So it might go out the window and it might have to do over. That's crazy in and of itself, but it shows that the process of democracy works because, you know, when something doesn't go right, people have a right to protest. They protest. The highest court took it up and they looked at it again and said, well, we might have overstepped this thing a little bit, right? Yeah, we might need to do this thing again in order to make sure that all the checks are checked off and all the balances are balanced. So is there hope for the world? We will find out on Tuesday. And until then, you all be good. You all be safe. Hopefully you didn't eat too much damn candy for Halloween. And please don't. And if you did, hopefully it was your candy. You didn't steal no damn candy for your children because you know how some of y'all are. Oh, baby, you can't eat that. But why I can never eat the Snickers? Every year I can never eat the Snickers. Why are the Snickers not good for me? But every time I thought about your ass is eating the Snickers. That bullshit right now. You all be good. Yeah, for real, right? Because I said so. You all be good. You all be safe. See you next week. Peace.
Holla.